Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. You ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control buildings and industry, and put that pools in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for a lead. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations who got the money. That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor is then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk own and control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about something like about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly's. They can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate. And that's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March for what? Who cares? Marching has never changed anything.
All right, we got started a little late this morning. I had a tech issue. What I did was I scheduled this podcast. And something just popped up on my thing right now. Hopefully. All right, wait a minute. Hopefully everything's going all right. Anyway, it seems like everything's going normal right now. All right, so today's live stream is titled "The Promised Land Ain't in Egypt," and this was inspired about 40 minutes ago, if that, or less than an hour ago. I was on a conversation on Clubhouse, and the title of the room was, will black folks ever have a promised land? And then it struck me, the promised land ain't in Egypt. And I called in, and I had to drop some history on them, but, man, these people were, in my opinion, they were so in the victimhood they couldn't see it. But maybe I wasn't communicating correctly. But anyway, let me go. Anyway, they inspired this podcast today titled "The Promised Land Ain't in Egypt." Now, we had to go Old Testament on this one, or the Torah, or whatever you want. And you don't have to be religious or nothing like that, but we had to look at what Egypt represented, okay, because, it, you know, the Bible is written in allegory and symbology. Egypt, basically, in Egypt, Egypt was where the universities were, where the jobs were, where, you know, people lived. It had a densely populated, it was a densely populated, the cities within Egypt, the country, were densely populated. So Egypt was like the, back in the ancient world, the place, that country and the cities within Egypt, you know, Alexandria and whatnot, were the places to go. Okay. If we translate it into, compared to what we have in 2022, New York would be an Egypt. Los Angeles would be an Egypt. Mumbai, India would be an Egypt. Tokyo, Japan would be an Egypt. London, England would be an Egypt. The Egypt back then was, once again, the places to go where, you know, you can live here and walk to your job or take a donkey to your job. You know, back then they didn't have cars back then, but that was the means of transportation, your feet or a donkey or whatever they had as far as transportation back in those ancient days. Okay. It represented the comfort and conveniences of the day. What Egypt would also be called the grid. Okay. All right. You know, you got more people living here. You have the government offering services that you're not going to have in rural Egypt back then. I mean, you know, matter of fact, let's see, capital of ancient Egypt. Let's get specific, because Egypt is, here we go, Cairo. Cairo and Memphis, let's go to Memphis, Egypt. And Egypt also represented, which is the government, okay, or the tycoons of that day, the pharaohs. That was their promised land. Okay. Like New York City and Chicago and Los Angeles, that's the promised land of the tycoons that have built up industries in those towns. All right. So Memphis, Cairo, and those towns are, we're talking about thousands of years old. All right, the United States is less than 250 years old. So the Hebrews were slaves. Now, you know what, to be more accurate with it, they were wage slaves. Because when you use that word slave, you got to use it in full context. Wage, they were paid, wage slaves. And there's more money in taking a profit versus taking a wage. Maybe we need to do a whole podcast on the distinctions between those two things. But if you have a business, you take your profits out, and the business owner is not paid a wage. Their wealth is determined by their profits. So now let's translate that to, you know, to today. You know, Seattle, well, Dallas, well, pick a city, Orlando, whatever. The largest cities are Egypt. They're the ones that have the most people, the most densely populated, you know, communities, you know. Everything's there. You know, the government jobs, once again, people, the reason why a lot of these large cities have large populations is because they offer many comforts and conveniences. one of the comforts and conveniences is, you know, well, you don't have to go that far to your job. Some people move into a city because they can walk to their job, or they can take a bike to their job, or they can take a short taxi cab to ride to their job, or there's a bus system as part of the infrastructure in that town where they can take a bus to the job, or they can take the metro to the job. All right? In a rural area, you don't have those comforts and conveniences. All right? And the further you go out, the more remote it is, you know, the cost of living will be dramatically lower, but the comfort and conveniences that a big city offers along with the services, I mean, in New York City, you can walk into New York City right now dead broke and walk into some type of social agency and get some type of help. You know, go to this shelter. Go to this place where you can get a meal. You know, do you need a bus ticket back to wherever you need to go to? That New York City has that. All right. Some people know how to play that system, and that's why New York for them is home. All right. However, if you go to Podunk, Iowa, where there might not be any social services office, there might not be any bus line, there is no metro line, there are none of the comfort and conveniences, there's no fire rent, there's no fire station, there's no police department in a lot of these towns. You know, a lot of people just don't, you know what, they want to go to a larger city where they have the comfort and conveniences of a larger town. Whereas in a smaller town, you have more freedom, but you need more life skills to survive in those towns. You know, like, for instance, give you an example, and I brought this up as one of my examples when I was on this call about an hour or so ago. Black Wall Street versus the black towns of Oklahoma, the black townships of Oklahoma. Black Wall Street was built on 40 acres within Egypt. Egypt was Tulsa, Oklahoma. Black Wall Street on that 40 acres represented the comfort and within that 40 acres stretch of land in within the Egypt of Tulsa, Oklahoma. And remember, Pharaoh resides in Egypt, okay? Pharaoh has the resources. Pharaoh has the military. Pharaoh has the law enforcement. Pharaoh is in charge of zoning. Egypt represents all that. So O.W. Gurley built, he bought 40 acres within Egypt, and people, they bought their plot of land from O.W. Gurley, and they offered up, they had their offices there. They can walk to where they need to go to, a short walk. I mean, it's only 40 acres, like 40 football fields. Or take a bike, or take a taxi. It was a short, wherever you needed to get to on Black Wall Street for black people living in there, everything was right there in that concentrated, highly density of 40 acres. It was Tulsa, Oklahoma, at that time, was Egypt. Now, the promised land for black folk was not Black Wall Street, because they built this shit in Egypt. Towns that were outside of Egypt, Taft, Oklahoma, Tallahassee, Oklahoma, Summit, Oklahoma, Redbird, Oklahoma, Booker T, Oklahoma. There's a map on, just go to any search engine and put in Black Towns, Oklahoma map. And about 13 or 15 of those towns are still standing. All of them except for one are over 100 years old. They're over Mount Bayou, Mississippi, is a black promised land. Eatonville, Florida, 45 minutes from where I'm at right now, is over 100 years old, is a black promised land. Highland Beach, Maryland, population 51. It still exists here in the United States. I've been there twice. All these towns I'm naming never had any racial violence or no violence at all. They're black promised lands. but most people don't know about these towns. We've had 2 million man marches in a span of 20 years because people were looking for look, the blueprint's already there. Epiphany that I got from that room was, because I said what I had to say and I had to get out and start this, because I was wasting my breath. The promised land ain't in Egypt. It's not in the promised land. You had to find a patch of land. Matter of fact, the Underground Railroad was based on leaving Egypt, leaving the Egypt of the plantation, and finding some place in Mexico or outside of what was known as the United States back then, going to Canada and finding a patch of land, finding your own promised land, where you would have to develop your own promised land from scratch. Josiah Henson, runaway slave, made his way to his promised land, which was Canada, where he was allowed to partner up through collaborative economics and get 400 acres of land and open up a school so he can teach other blacks that found their way there, forever former slaves that found their way to this particular promised land, so they can get the skill set to grow food, to learn how to catch food, to build their own houses. Once again, the critical mass of black folks in the United States of America in 2022, and I hate to say it, the youngins, 20-somethings and 30-something-year-olds, they're looking for their promised land in Egypt, and you're not going to find it. You're not going to find it in Egypt. In New York, let's just take New York City. That's Donald Trump's promised land and his family's promised land. Because we can say his father, when his father was Fred Trump. All right, that's his dad. And then his granddad before him. But his dad, he was building a house for $3,999 and $4,999, single-family homes. That was his promised land. And before that, his father, Donald Trump's grandfather, the mustard seed was planted for Donald Trump, no matter what you think about him, was planted when his grandfather came over from Germany and opened up a rooming house. Bloomberg, Michael Bloomberg, former mayor of New York City, that's his promised land. Now, let's go to some white. Now, if you're going to stay in those cities, and I'm going to use a couple of examples of black folk. Jay-Z, his wife Beyonce, and Puff Daddy, or P. Diddy, or whatever his name today is. Okay. And the late Reginald Lewis. If you never heard of Reginald F. Lewis, Reginald Francis Lewis, you need to get his book. Why Should White Guys Have All the Fun? It's a classic book. He's the first black American to be worth $1 billion. Or put it this way, own a $1 billion company. I'll put it that way. All right. Before Oprah. Okay. Now, and Oprah's not the only one. There are people balling bigger than her that are black also, but that's another whole nother podcast. Now, Jay-Z, who grew up in New York City, okay, which on a landscape level is not a black person's promised land. Within the hip hop industry, see, hip hop, no matter what you think about it, is an industry. It's not regulated by the government. You don't even need a $2 business license to get into the hip-hop industry. You don't even have to know how to rap. to get into the hip-hop ministry. Jay-Z and people like Dr. Dre, they got into the hip-hop industry, gangster rap. It's the industry. They sell they have clothing lines. Not regulated. It's not interfering. It's not on somebody else's Egypt. None of these guys went to Tommy Hilfiger or Motorola. They saw an untapped industry here, and they became billionaires, first generation, because they didn't try to get on somebody. Once again, your promised land is not in Egypt. The Jewish, there's only about 7 or 8 million Jews globally on the whole planet Earth. But they know their lane. And they found their own promised land. They've become very proficient with it. China, as a country and culture, their promised land is in manufacturing. Now, manufacturing is a whole big thing. I believe if black Americans, that's what I'm bringing up again, Mignon Francois, a black woman with 7 kids. She found her here's a woman with 7 kids. She's a millionaire now, but with 7 kids, the electricity's cut off, the water's cut off. You know, if Child Protection Services found out about what she was going through, their house was facing foreclosure, Child Protection Services could have possibly came in and taken her kids. They can't do that now because she's rich. And you would think a person like that would go and probably go to a temp agency or go to services and try to get a job. She took her grandmother's cupcake recipe. That was her recipe. That was her promised land. Cupcakes. It went from $5 million to $10 million in total sales so far and counting. But I'm just saying, particularly for black folk in the United States, your promised land ain't in Egypt. And you might have, just like in that story goes, and I'm not a preacher or nothing like that, but they had to cross the Red Sea. You're going to have to face impossible situations. Whatever you define those to be, and you're going to have to step out in faith, and you'll be all right. Because as you step out into what appears to be an impossible situation, see, what the Creator knew is that your enemies can't swim. And then you're going to have to ignore the people because they were bad-mouthing Moses. Said we were better off in Egypt. At least we wouldn't be starving. We'd have 3 hots in the cot. They were in their griping and complaining out there in the wilderness. They were talking about the creature comforts of Egypt, which in today's language, 2022, the creature comforts of Chicago. Now, your promised land ain't in Chicago. It's not going. You can have a black mayor. That's not going to help. You can have a predominantly black city council. That's not going to help. You can march and protest all you want. That's not going to help. You're going to have to go to the rural areas of Illinois or wherever you are. You're going to have to find it in cyberspace. 2 areas where there's promised lands in 2022, rural areas, geographically speaking, or cyberspace. The guys who started Airbnb, their promised land was found via an app in cyberspace. The same with Uber Eats, Lyft, and a whole bunch of apps that you might have on your phone. So there's a bunch of people that are, that's what they're doing. Their promised land is in cyberspace. For other people, and you know, it's a combination of cyberspace as well as on land. But wherever it is, it's a place where you have little or basically zero competition. And you, it, where you can have your own thing. And you can run it the way you want to run it. All right, I'm going to the phone lines here. I got to play this one song by my morning ritual because we got started late. But give me 4 minutes, I'm coming to the phone lines.
Out.
Tonight's live stream is titled "The Promised Land Ain't in Egypt." And let's take a look at Egypt. let's deal with some numbers here. Egypt as a country is probably about 5,000 years old. Alexander the Great conquered it in 332 BC. The unification of it, they say here, was around 3,100 BC. It's an old city. It's an old country, and the cities within it are old. Let's deal with Cairo. Cairo's a city in Egypt. And Milan, let's compare it to the United States as a country. The United States is less than 250 years old. Cairo, which is just one community in Egypt, was founded in 2000 BC by Ken Menzies, but hopefully I'm pronouncing that correctly. It's founded in 2000 BC. So it's been around. And in that time, you know, they've had different governments. They've had, you know, ways to, you know, the infrastructure or whatnot. They went through the pharaoh system and whatnot. And just like over here, you know, you have for instance, Houston, Texas. Houston, Texas was founded by two brothers. Many of the towns that are found around the world were basically found by individuals or small families. But Houston was founded by just two brothers. And a lot of people, and for the sake of this conversation, it's just not black, but I guess it's something inherent in man that when we see something that somebody else has developed, there's something within man, regardless of race or color or religion, that we want to go in and they already developed it, so let's go ahead on and colonize, or let's just go ahead and take their shit, to be honest about it. You know, when Columbus came over here, there were people in the Western Hemisphere, because he never made it to mainland United States as we know it today, or South America. But there were people when those ships docked. There was a civilization there. People, we had a government, infrastructure, we had all that. They didn't have guns. They didn't have that weaponry. But still, that was their thing. And then, of course, if you read the full story of Columbus, you know, they came over and took that shit. And that's happened with, Genghis Khan in Mongolia. He conquered, if you looked at, arguably, Genghis Khan at his peak was probably one of the world's wealthiest men ever. Surpasses Bill Gates, anybody who's got out here today. Him and Mana Musa out of Africa. Arguably, it's between those two. Who was the wealthiest man ever so far? But Genghis Khan was basically a gangster. He was taking people's shit. And he would conquer communities, towns, populations, something that was already developed. You know, because to develop something from scratch, you know, you got to have some skills. You know, particularly back then, you know, you to build a house, you know, you had to know something about, all right, well, where can I, you know, how can I source the material to build a house? And that's a whole bunch of skill sets that the average modern man does not have today. There are people that have it, but for the most part, on a critical mass basis, modern man doesn't have it. Now, you can probably go to a community college or someplace like that or go to somebody online that teaches you that. There are plenty of people online that teaches that. But for the most part, you're not going to get that in mainstream education globally. Most of us don't know how to grow our own food nor catch it. You know, we have to go to Whole Foods, Giant, Safeway, Piggly Wiggly, whatever grocery store is in your neck of the woods. You know, if we want beef, it's all packaged for us at a grocery store. I know a friend of mine was telling me when he was, you know, coming up, anybody in his family wanted a hamburger, his mother would say, all right, go to the freezer, get a piece of get a piece of beef. And they had a meat grinder in their house. They made their own ground beef that's how they made burgers when he was coming up. Now you go to the grocery store and just, hey, you get a 4-pack, 6-pack, you know, the patties, the hamburger patties already made. That's what we're talking about, comfort and convenience. That's Egypt. Egypt, the concept of Egypt, whether it be 3,000 years ago, 5,000 years ago, or today, represents the comforts and conveniences of a community. You don't have to go far for your job. Matter of fact, you don't even have to make up a job. At one time, if you look at the history of man basically provided for himself because man created his own job. He saw what was needed in his community. It could be growing food. It could be making shoes. It could be making clothes. It could be catching food, being a hunter. You know, back in George Washington, Thomas Jefferson's days, there was no such thing as a plumber as we know it today. So, once again, Egypt represents, you know, the comfort and conveniences of a larger community. But those comforts and conveniences are typically owned and controlled by the pioneers who saw an opportunity and helped build the community. See, the black townships of the United States, let's go with Mount Bayou, Mississippi. Mount Bayou, Mississippi was started by a man, Montgomery. And look it up. Look it up right now. Mount Bayou, Mississippi. M-O-U-N-D. Mount Bayou, Mississippi. Look up the guy who, he started off life as a slave. But he had to go find... He didn't try to go to a developed town in Mississippi. Mount Bayou, Mississippi. Let's do some comparisons here. How am I doing on time? Because we started out late today. Okay, we got 40 minutes left. All right, so... Mound Bayou, Mississippi. Mississippi, okay. We're going to do a comparison. Oh, and Mound Bayou, if you look on the internet, it's 561 acres. It was founded on July 12th, 1887. So let's get this down now. It was founded on July 12, 1887, and it's 561 acres. Now, I'm on Wikipedia. Follow me now. Follow me. Let's look at the history. Mound Bayou traces its origins to a freed African-Americans from a community in Davis Bend, Mississippi. Davis Bend was started in 1820s by planter Joseph E. Davis. Well, hold, that's not what I want you to look at. Isaiah, all right, click on this word, I mean name. Isaiah T. Montgomery led the founding of Mound Bayou in 1887 in Wilderness in northwest Mississippi. Now, there are three people I'm going to do this comparison with. Isaiah T. Montgomery, Martin Luther King, and Medgar Evers. And I'm going to throw in Farrakhan. All right. Once again, Isaiah T. Montgomery, Martin Luther King, Medgar Evers, and Minister Louis Farrakhan. Now, before I go any further, Farrakhan, Martin Luther King, and Medgar Evers have done a lot of positive things for black folk. I'm going to leave it there, but now let's throw back in Isaiah T. Montgomery. And once again, today's podcast is titled, The Promised Land Ain't in Egypt. All right, now, let's go back to Isaiah T. Washington, I mean Montgomery. I'm on the Wikipedia page for Mound Bayou, Mississippi. Isaiah T. Montgomery, who was born a slave, led the founding of Mount Bayou in 1887 in Wilderness, northwest Mississippi. Promised land. There was no infrastructure there. Okay. No infrastructure at all. Now, Isaiah T., and there's a picture of him online. He was born May 21st, 1847, and his transition was March 5th, 1924. All right, now, let's go to that on Wikipedia. Isaiah Montgomery. Isaiah Thornton Montgomery was founder of Mount Bayou, Mississippi, an all-black community, period. A Republican, he was a delegate to the 1890 Mississippi Constitutional Convention and served as mayor of Mount Bayou. Now, let's drop down to early life and education. Born into slavery, Isaiah was the son of Ben Montgomery, a slave whose owner, Joseph Davis, promoted him to overseer. So here's a guy, Isaiah Montgomery, who was born a slave. His dad was born a slave, too, who ended up going out into the wilderness. See, Martin Luther King, Thornton Montgomery versus MLK. MLK went marching in Alabama. What did he get? Eventually, he caught a bullet. That might sound cold, but hey, I'm just telling that it is what it is. Medgar Evers, who lived in Mississippi, he organized and all this, that. Good intentions for both of them, good work for both of them, but the blueprint was already in existence before those dudes were even born. Minister Farrakhan, 2 million man marches over a 20-year period of time. You had people, Farrakhan had people march, drive, take buses, trains, planes to Washington, D.C. The Million Man March, one and two. Isaiah Montgomery did more by him. Well, once again, he didn't. See, Washington, D.C. is somebody else's promised land. Just to be straight up about it. They got their own infrastructure. You know, you got the city, you got the local government, you got the, you know, the national government. Man, that's somebody else's promised land. That's somebody else's Egypt. And what Isaiah Montgomery did is what other black folks have done in the United States, and I've gone through several of these over the years, that they, you know what, I'm going to find me a patch of land where there's no infrastructure, and you know what, I'm going to take the skills that I've learned on the plantation, and I'm going to start my own town. That can still be done in 2022. I got out of that room this morning. Because these kids were like 20 or 30 something, man, and just such a victim attitude. If you got a victim attitude, and particularly if you don't have the skill set to go along with it, I mean, well, because you're going to have to develop some new skills. You know, but matter of fact, Pleasant Stephens, who's progressing along, his wife is from Mount Bayou, Mississippi. And another person that he has helping him up there in Chicago right now, he's also from Mount Bayou, Mississippi. As a matter of fact, tomorrow we might do a show featuring somebody from Mount Bayou, Mississippi. Because while it's on my mind, I'm going to call them up later today and say, look, come on, I want you... I've had somebody on here before from Mount Bayou, Mississippi, but tomorrow we might just do all, because that was the promised land. Here's a guy, Isaiah Montgomery, that he didn't try to go to Selma, Alabama. What are the big towns in, let me go to Mississippi. Mississippi, MISSIPPI. Okay, Mississippi. Like Jackson. You know, Jackson's somebody else's Egypt. And all the major towns in Mississippi. That's somebody – I'm looking at Mega Evers right now. All right, Mega Evers was born in Decatur, Mississippi. He was assassinated in Jackson, Mississippi. Jackson, Mississippi – now, let's look up Jackson, Mississippi real quick here. That's where he was living. He was living in Jackson, Mississippi. And let's see, Jackson, Mississippi. Let's look up the vitals on Jackson, Mississippi. And once again, his heart was in the right place. But it was somebody else's Egypt. And I think, just in my opinion, that's where a lot of, on a critical mass basis, a lot of African Americans miss it. We're trying to get on a come up on somebody else's Egypt. No. We need to find our own promised land. Like Isaiah Montgomery. Or like Mother Priscilla Baltimore. also born in slavery. She found her own promised land. If you look up the term Freedmen's Villages, F-R-E-E-D-M-A-N, one word, Freedmen's Villages, and look at them from state to state. Those towns right here in the United States, most of them were formed by former black folk. I mean, former slaves. Affirmative action, you're trying to get a come up on somebody else's Egypt. My message to black folks on a critical mass basis, stop trying to get a come up on somebody else's Egypt. Find your own promised land. Now, once again, you're probably going to have to develop some skills, and you're probably going to have to partner up and do some collaborations with some other people who have skills that you don't have. But it's doable. It's doable. All right, now, Jackson, Mississippi, this is where Mega Everest was assassinated. But Mega Everest was living in Egypt. Straight up living in Egypt. Isaiah Montgomery, on the other hand, he found his own, same state, Mississippi. It was more dangerous to be a black person back in the day of Isaiah Montgomery than in the days of Mega Everest or Martin Luther King. But he found 561 acres of land that was undeveloped. As the Wikipedia article says, it was wilderness. No electric company there. Paperboy ain't coming through there. No general store. None of that. But the probability, and to this day, there's never been any racial violence in Mount Bayou, Mississippi. That's why I'm going to call people today and see if I can get them on tomorrow. So you can hear from somebody who grew up in Mount Bayou. And there are other towns like that. Because I'm tired of hearing the victim stories. I'm tired of hearing them. But the victim stories typically take place in Egypt. We have no business being in Egypt. Seek out your own promised land. Six 619-768-2945. That's the number to call if you got any comment. Today's podcast is titled "The Promised Land Ain't in Egypt." Well, I got on my mind Farrakhan with two of them. See, and you know, Minister Farrakhan had good intentions. But what I'm telling people, you know what, instead of marching to Washington, D.C. or going someplace like that, wherever you are, within a 60-mile to 120-mile radius of your town, find a rural area that's undeveloped and buy the land. That's your promised land. You don't want to do there are 19,500 municipalities in the United States. God knows how many unincorporated communities in the United States. Like, I've named this on here before. Blackjack, Oklahoma. I've been to Blackjack, Oklahoma 3 or 4 times, at least. You probably won't find any of – I haven't found any information on it yet on the Internet. It's a community literally right next door to Taft, Oklahoma. Information on that you'll find online. Blackjack's right next door to it. There's a whole lot of Blackjack – Blackjack's a black town. It's just not a municipality. But there's a whole lot of towns just like Blackjack all over the United States. Anybody within the sound of my voice can go to one of these places where it's just wilderness, trees or whatever, and striking distance to civilization. Now, striking distance can be 15 to 20-minute drive, or it could be 1, 2, or 3-hour drive. I got 10 acres of land in a county in Texas, and it might be 30, 45 minutes to where I can go to a general store. But if I want to go to a Walmart, it's just 2.5, maybe 3-hour drive to go to a Walmart. There's no bus line, but I don't need that. No electric bill, no water bill. I know how to solve all those. I know how to provide for myself and all that type of stuff. That's one of my promised lands. I got 3 of them right now. I got 3 promised lands, all in different geographical locations. Anybody can have a promised land or multiple promised lands. It's just, you know, but the thing is, once again, the promised land ain't in Egypt. It's not in Manhattan. Where did Martin Luther King get assassinated? He got assassinated in, Memphis, Tennessee? If you noticed, the common denominator with all these high-profile shootings of black folk, predominantly black men, is in somebody else's Egypt. Ahmaud Arbery, George Floyd, Eric Gardner, Mike Brown. Every last one of them is in somebody else's Egypt. And your promised land, if you're a black man in what we call the continental United States, is not in Egypt. It's not in Memphis. See, had Martin Luther King, in my opinion, had Martin Luther King been in Podunk, Tennessee, he might be living today. Matter of fact, let me bring another person into this. Elijah Muhammad, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. He bought a lot of farmland, but nobody talks about that. Nobody talks about that at all. He founded, through the Nation of Islam, I got my hats off to him. The Nation of Islam, historically, particularly when Elijah Muhammad was alive, they bought, even if it was on somebody else's Egypt, they didn't try to, they knew their lane. But when you try to get a come up on or in within somebody else's Egypt, and you don't have the politics, you know it's not going to work out for you. You know what Did I play the, you know what? I'll be back in 2 minutes. We got plenty of time left. I'll be back in 2 minutes.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles. The kid no one would pick. Was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
Okay, today's podcast is titled The Promised Land Ain't in Egypt. A book I recommend is The Life and Times of Joseph Clark. The Life and Times of Joseph E. Clark, From Slavery to Town Founder. Now, he's the guy who founded the town of Eatonville, Florida. And it documents that, you know, he was born a slave and how he came across the land to purchase to start the town. And there's even a movie that Halle Berry acted in. I had to find out the name of that movie because I've seen it before. That sort of is based on this, but the book is titled "The Life and Times of Joseph E. Clark, From Slavery to Town Founder." And once again, Joseph Clark and others with him, they didn't try to waltz into Orlando with their politics and their way of doing business and their lifestyle or whether Orlando's only 6 miles away. And that's the other comparison Rosewood versus Eatonville. Rosewood, somebody was trying to get on the come up in somebody else's Egypt. Eatonville, Orlando, Florida, was Egypt in that neck of the woods. But Joseph Clark said, no, no, you know what? No. We're not going to try to set up shop in Orlando. We're not going to try to set up, because that would be Egypt to them. All right, we're not going to march and protest and say this is unequal and this is not fair and the Constitution. You know what? Where can we? And they found a nice patch of land big enough, because Edenville's got over 2,000 people today. Small town. But they found their own promised land. And they have never had any racial problems at all. However, more black people have heard of the victimhood story that happened within the Egypt confines of Rosewood. And black folks didn't own that town. You had about 10 or 15 black folks, that households that were in Rosewood. When they torched that town, they used the ruse that a black man did something to a white woman. But they burned everybody's house down. You had more white people that lived in Rosewood than black folks. John Singleton didn't put that in his movie now, did he? He took dramatic license, which most people do in Hollywood. Rosewood was Egypt. Joseph Clark chose the route of promised land. Promised land is like, see, when you find something that is, for the most part, totally undeveloped, unless it's a ghost town where you got the infrastructure in place, but, you know, nature's taking over. That's a whole nother podcast. But Eatonville, over 100 years old, no horror stories. Because Joseph Clark, he didn't go to Orlando, which was somebody else's Egypt. It's akin to, like, if you're married. If you're married, let's say you're married, you've established a household, you know, you got a routine going, and then somebody knocks on your door and say, I want your wife. I want your life. Okay. Man or woman, that wouldn't sit kindly to the average person. Even people who have alternative lifestyles. It just wouldn't fit well. I mean, you've done all this work to develop a relationship with this person, to get into a committed relationship with this person. You know, you're living together, you have a family together, you got a household together, meals together, and then somebody knocks on your door and says, I want your woman or I want your husband. No, no, no. Go out and get your own spouse or mate or whatever and develop a relationship from scratch. So with the Megar Evers thing, which was horrific, totally horrific, but I'm looking at it from, okay, wait a minute. Once again, he was in Jackson, Mississippi, and it wasn't his promised land. People who had roots in Jackson was looking at, you know what, this dude is, this is what we do in Jackson. And we just don't, this is our thing in Jackson. Now, I'm not justifying the way they, but hey, what they did, But I'm just thinking that type of thing existed. Where he had mega average, and I'm theorizing here because, you know, I don't have a time machine or nothing like that, but had he been thinking like Isaiah Montgomery and others, and maybe he never knew about anything about Isaiah Montgomery, I don't know. Because I don't recall, I mean, maybe y'all know something, I don't know. Did Medgar Evers or Martin Luther King or even Malcolm X, did any of them lead a march to a rural area where the plan was land? Isaiah T. Washington, he bought 561 acres of land by his lonesome. And then went back and collaborated with people to start the sound chip. Now, maybe, I don't know everything about Martin Luther King or Medgar Evers or Malcolm X, but did any of those three, 619-768-2945 is the number, did any of those three lead a march or a protest? So I'm throwing in Minister Farrakhan with 2 million man marches, which at least $50 million was spent by the participants getting to and fro to the march. We include transportation, lodging, food, and things of that nature. Because Isaiah Washington, he didn't have nowhere near $1 million. But he had enough to buy 561 acres of land by himself. No internet connection, no smartphone, no tablet, no desktop. No Jesse Jackson, no. Matter of fact, let's still, has Jesse Jackson led a march? Has Al Sharpton led a march to any area where they say, you know what, we're going to start our own community? Our own promised land. Since they're reverends, Reverend Sharpton, Reverend Jackson, Reverend Martin Luther King, no disrespect, I'm just saying. The question is, has any of them ever led a march? Ahmaud Arbery, you know, because Jesse Jackson showed up to that. I haven't heard him make a statement. You know what? Black people, whatever part of Georgia that was in, move out of this city and move to this part of Georgia. The strategy of trying to get on a come up in somebody else's Egypt, in my opinion, doesn't work. So you'll get a Band-Aid. You'll get a crumb. All right, all affirmative action. All right, well, you know, this with this all, even with reparations, you'll get crumbs. But you get the whole damn, not only cake, but a whole bakery if you go out with your own promised land. And there's promised lands out here for everybody. At least that's the way I see it. Now let me get off my soapbox. Once again, my message for today, whether you agree with it or not, is the promised land, your promised land, particularly if you're African American, black or whatever, or you can be a white person, is not in Egypt. You got to find your own thing. If you decide to stay in Egypt, then be satisfied with life as a slave. Because slaves, think about it, a slave had a convenience. They didn't have to worry about clothes. They didn't have to worry about food. They didn't have to worry about shelter. Everything a slave needed was right there on the plantation, right in Egypt. However, if they wanted freedom, freedom cost. They had to know how to navigate, how to get from A to Z you know, which way is north or south, or if they were going to Mexico. What kind of foods can I forage along the way? Can I recognize the foods that I can forage and eat and survive off of? Do I have the social capital to keep safe and not get caught? And then once I do make it to my so-called promised land, geographically speaking, do I have the life skills to eat food, to grow food, to trade? Four ten, your mic is open. Okay, going once.
Hotep. How you doing, Brother LA?
Fine.
I was on mute because I was listening to your vision. And you know what? It's a workable vision. I was thinking about it can be done. And it has been done. Yeah, and it has been done recently.
Right.
And the thing is, you know, hey, look, Brother L.A., I had to go back. Yesterday I got in on your program late, so I missed the most important parts of your program, and I just addressed one part of it. But look, today's topic. In your promised land, are you willing to defend it with your life?
Very good point. I'm glad you brought that up, because in the planning of your community, it is imperative that in the planning stages, particularly as your community grows and becomes valuable not only to yourself but to others outside the community, you do have to anticipate that somebody is going to try to take what you have developed. And that did not happen with Black Wall Street. That's the lesson I got out of that whole Black Wall Street thing. They didn't have a plan where they can defend it.
Well, my question to you is, with your pieces of promised land, are you willing to defend it with your life or take a life? Are you, Brother L.A., willing to take a life or give your life in defense of your promised lands?
That's a real good question.
No, it's not. I mean, you don't have to ponder that. It's a yes or no. Come on now.
All right. That's an honest question to ask. And I'm going to say I'm not willing to take or give a life, and here's why. Because there's so much of it out there that I'll just move on to another place and start fresh.
Well, you can stop your vision right there. You can stop. Don't say another word. If you're not willing to defend what you own, then your vision, really, I mean, you don't have a soapbox to stand on. Now,
well,
my thing is,
I can be a nomad.
No, look, regardless of where you go, somebody might want to take your shit. As you say.
You're right. You're absolutely right.
You're just going to keep moving. And as they come along, somebody comes along and says, well, shit, Brother L.A. got 10 acres here. I want that, like they did with these sundown towns. So now my thing is this, and I ask you a simple question, and you say, according to your answer, you're not willing to defend what you own. You're willing to just move on and let them take the stuff.
To a point. I'm not going to defend it with my life. Because I'm looking at there's so much abundance out here. All right, well, hey, because none of us own anything anyway, regardless of what a piece of paper says.
That's my point. That's my point to you. But I'm just saying this. When I say defendant with your life or take a life, that means any action that you need to take to defend what you have, whether it's political, whether it's within the law, or whether it means taking somebody's life to protect what you got.
Now, let me fill in a couple of blanks here. I'm not willing to defend it with my physical life. Now, on a political end, I'm willing to do what I think needs to be done on a political end to defend it. That's another reason, because with these little itty bitty towns, where you know the mayor has picked me up from the airport, those towns, my budget, my pocketbook can afford those itty bitty little towns that have less than 300 people, and politically and social capital wise, you know, I'll try to defend myself or pre-plan to, you know, have relationships in place and political alliances in place to protect my interests in those towns. But if it came down to somebody pointing a shotgun at me, you know what? You can have it. I'll just go over and find me something else because there's plenty of it out here. I'm not willing to lay down my life over it.
Well, if you're not willing to do that, then all that you've been discussing this morning is for naught. Because here's the deal. When you set out to find your promised land and you develop it and you succeed in making it work, somebody might want to come and challenge and take what you have. Now, if you can't do that, then it's not worthy of you even doing any damn thing.
How far are you willing to go to defend your promised land?
I will kill a son of a bitch if he try to take what I got. I'm gonna be I ain't gonna stutter. I'm not gonna hoop and haw. I will kill a son of a bitch to try to take what I got. If I can't do it legally, and I can't use politics to protect it, and somebody going to come in and tell me, hey, look, I'm taking this, I'm willing to die for it, and I'm willing to kill for it. So now, it ain't no gray area with me.
Right now, I'll just go politically, but I'm not where you are yet. I'll put it that way. I'm not there yet.
If you're not, then all you said this morning is meaningless. All that you said this morning is meaningless. Because here's the thing. You got to take a stand. And what you said this morning is, hey, look, all you people out there, and look, you're a victim. Because what you're going to do is if somebody come and challenge you, you're going to haul ass. That's basically what you're saying.
We're talking about physically.
That's right. Politically and physically. If somebody
politically
takes it,
I'll fight.
It would have
shotgun in front of my face. I can't outrun a bullet.
No, because you got to take a stand. You got to take a stand. And that's the problem. That's the problem right there, because here's the deal. If they come up and they put some meaningless, what do they call it in place? Oh, shit. What do they call it? Ordinance. And say, look, you know what?
Ordinance. Okay, yeah.
If they come and you know that the ordinance is illegal, then, yeah, you're going to run. You're going
to
fight
The ordinance, I can try to fight that.
Yeah, but now if you know it's illegal and you know it's a land grab and you know, hey, wait a minute, this is not according to the law and they take it anyway, then, yeah, I mean, you've exhausted all laws on the books to try and protect what you got. Mm. And the thing is this. you have to make a decision. Now you say, well, I'm going to go somewhere else. Well, you're a victim. And you can say any darn thing that you want to, but now if the Honorable Elijah Muhammad said, there ain't no need of building something if you can't protect it. And if you're not willing to sacrifice.
I agree with that. But, now you're willing to, see, this can go so many different ways. If, I'll go politically or legally, but when it comes to violence, there's so much more out here. I'll go look somewhere. That's my stand on it right now.
Well, you're a victim. You're a damn victim. And look, here's the thing. Here's what I'm saying here. That's just like when the mafia came to your business and said, look, you know what? You got a nice thing here. And the thing is, we're going to be partners from here on out.
Right.
Now, if you don't want to go along with it, then you know we're going to take other measures. Now, most black folks will say, hey, well, you know what? Yeah, you're right. You know, I'll work for you. You know, you've seen these in the movies.
Right.
See.
Oh, we had a guest on here.
The law ain't got nothing to do with it. All those sundown towns that we've read about, the people, somebody come here and say, you know what, L.A., I've been looking at your property here, and the thing is, you either sell for what I want you to sell it for, or we're gonna make sure that, hey, look, you don't stay here any longer. So now you already know who's giving you the threat.
All right.
You go to the sheriff and say, well, look, and they say, well, you better not go to the law. You go to the sheriff and say, look, somebody's threatening me here, and they want to take my property. And the first thing he says, well, you know, I can't do nothing about that, you know. And then you go back.
Beasley also said, now, in your planning stage, you need to anticipate that somebody might try to take what you have. I did say that.
That's right.
You have to anticipate it.
That's right.
It'll be foolish not to anticipate it. You won't think of everything, but you got to anticipate somebody is going to try to come along and take what you have, even if it's just a relationship you got with a woman or whatever. There's going to be somebody that wants something that you have. That's just the way life is.
That's right. So now it boils down to how far are you willing to go.
Exactly. And I'm not willing to lose my life over it. That's all I'm saying.
You're a fucking victim. Because the thing is, you're willing to give what you got and don't put up a fight, and you're going to move somewhere else. I mean, if you move somewhere else, somebody might want to take what you got somewhere else, and you're going to be a victim for the rest of your life. So now my thing is this, and I'm going to go back to where you started. Yes, everybody, we're in Egypt. And you know what? My thing is, everywhere we set our foot down is a promised land. And the thing is, you can build it and do it what you want to, because, see, you didn't give a vital stat for Jackson, Mississippi a few minutes ago. I noticed that you didn't go all the way with it. In Jackson, Mississippi.
What vital stat are you talking about for Jackson?
The demographics.
Oh, no, I did not look that up. Do you happen to know what that is today?
Yeah. It's 78% black.
Okay.
That's the population. 20% or less white. See, that's
do you know what it was
property,
when Mega Evers was alive? I don't know what it was back then.
Might have been just as much or more.
Okay.
But the thing is, that's a black promised land right there. But see, they got the mentality you got. See, I don't want to go in and control the space I occupy. And I'm afraid to go in and protect it and control it. And the thing is,
if Jackson, Mississippi, although it has 70% black, okay, black folks didn't start and found Jackson, Mississippi, whereas Isaiah Washington, Montgomery, in the same state, he found 561 acres that had to be started from scratch. Mayor Evers went into something that was already set up.
Okay, let me give you this, Brother L.A. When the white boy came here, all of this was controlled by Indians, right?
Yeah, and they had that gun.
Thank you.
The Indians, but the white man.
Thank you. They had weapons. So now, look, that's a bad example you're putting out there. My thing
Although they did fight back.
You're making my point. You're making my point. See, when you own something and you control something, you're supposed to fight to the death. See, yeah, the Indian lost, but he lost protecting what he owned. He was just against a bigger force. But the thing is, he got more respect than us black folks because we black folks are just like you said. Well, you know, I can't fight them, so I'm going to move somewhere else. And you keep moving until you can't move no more. But the thing is, I just asked the question.
Now, let me ask you this, okay? You would fight to the death. Now, are you speaking as a lone wolf, or are you going Amish style? In other words, if they pick on Beasley, they got to pick on all of us.
Well, the way you set the scenario, you say I have my own
right.
Promise.
And I was speaking as a lone wolf.
One of the things
I need to do is I need to gather my own, art, whatever you want to call it, because the lone wolf ain't gonna make it.
Well, I mean, I'm just trying to show you where your vision.
Well, you're right. If I'm looking at it as a lone wolf, I'm going to have to move on. However, if I have it as a community of people or a wolf pack, then I'm not fighting. Then I can defend, but I can't defend alone.
And they're going to have to be willing to defend it to the death. See, the thing is this, Brother Ella. You got to use your social capital, like you said.
Mm-hmm.
And look, the thing is this, that's what's wrong with black folk now. See, we're not willing to stand up for what we believe in or what we own. In Jackson, Mississippi, 78% black right now, they're supposed to control that area where they are.
Right.
No if anything else about it. Now, you can come up there and say, well, you know, the thing is, you're outnumbered
and
all this. Yeah.
I don't know. It'll be... Mississippi's always had a lot of blacks, and more than likely, you're probably correct, even back the day Mary Evers was assassinated, there was probably a black majority there, but who was in control, I mean, who was the shit, because more than likely, Jackson's probably got a black mayor, black police chief, and all that. Now, I'm going to have to do the homework to see what was happening on the day he was assassinated.
Well, look, it doesn't matter. Let me give you this, Brother L.A. Let me give you this, because...
And you know his wife left right after that happened.
That's right, but let me give you this, Brother L.A., and, you know, I'm a very simple-thinking person. I don't use all kinds of scenarios and all of this. See, black is black to me and white is white. There's no gray area with me. You know, it's very little wiggle room for me. And I'm going to just put it out there. I'm not wishy-washy. And the thing is this. The only reason we're in the shape we're in is because we don't have an identity. That's number one. And number two, we don't practice the laws of nature, self-preservation and survival of the fittest. And you hear me say that all the time. And the trick is, we're always looking at things as an individual. Now, what you're saying is correct. Yeah, we're supposed to go out there and get all we can out there, and we're supposed to control the space we're in. In fact, Booker T. Washington says, set your buckets down where you are. And I can't think of the rest of the phrase.
Mm-hmm.
But the trick is this. if you're not willing to defend, look, number one, in order for you to go out there, now you got 10 acres.
Yep.
But now, in order to protect that 10 acres, like the gentleman that created Mound
Valley.
Well,
I'm going to need some people to help me do that. I can't do that by myself. I already know that.
The thing is, it's going to be hard for you to do because we don't have an identity. See, a black person, if you had like-minded black people, they could take what you got and go right outside of Chicago and go to Brooklyn, Illinois. Is that the name of the place? And they could buy
anything. Oh, you got Hopkins Park, Pembroke, and Brooklyn. Yeah, you got those three places, yeah.
Yeah, and they could go out there and say, you know what, we're catching hell here in this city. Let's go out, Church of God in Christ, AME, AMEZ, and all the other congregations and say, look, you know what, we can go out there and we can buy all of this up, and we can go out there and leave these ruffians, Keystone Rangers and Gangster Disciples and all of that crap, leave them right in there and let them kill each other, and we can practice our religion, and we can do what we're going to do. But now here's the thing. When we go out there, we're going to have to protect it because somebody going to want to come and take our shit. And that would be the way to go because but when you don't have an identity, see, what you're saying won't work because everybody, well, yeah, I ain't going to leave Chicago. I'm going to go out there with all of them.
You're 100% correct. But here's the thing about, because Chicago represents Egypt. The thing is, pulling them, getting them to leave Chicago, they don't want to leave it.
Thank you. You're making my point. But now some people are willing to do it. Let me give you an example.
Yeah, some people are willing to do it. Some are.
Yeah. Let me give you an example. Okay, the Nawabians. Under Malachi York. Now, don't get me wrong. Malachi York was he was a scoundrel.
Right.
He had the right idea, but he had the wrong morals. He went down and did exactly like you were talking about. He got a group of people to buy into this idea. We're going to go down in Georgia, and we're going to set up our own community. We're going to have a little Egypt. And this
right.
community bought 400 and some acres of land and paid $907,000 cash for that property.
Right.
He had his own little compound and everything else. And they were making money in there, by the way. If you read the story, they were making money. But see, they had the wrong leader. They had a person that was, he was mentally imbalanced. But now
right.
he did the same thing you were talking about. And no white folks did not want it. They put up all kinds of ordinance and statutes and every damn thing else to go in and try and get those people out. And and look, Wesley Snipes had a stretch of land right down the road from him. But now here's the thing. They didn't do what you and I are talking about. They didn't anticipate the enemy. And
right.
what happened is they found one little weakness, and it was a faulty leader that they had there. Now, I ask you the question, are you willing to defend that with your life or take a life? Now, here's the trick. They tried to fight it in court. They know that what those people were doing was illegal. And the thing is, they found one weakness, and that was with the leader. But after the leader left, the white folks went in there and took it. So I go back to where I started. Yeah, you got a good vision, but you better be prepared to go all the way with this thing. If you're not willing to go all the way, you're a victim, and you're going to be a victim. And the thing is, the white folks took that land back. Now, at 400 and some acres of land, they took it back. The same amount of land, almost the same amount of land, you're talking about that Mount Bayou's on right now.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
My thing is this. All I'm telling you is that, yeah, number one, you got to have an identity. Number two, you got to practice the laws of nature. And number three, you better be prepared to go all the way with this thing, regardless of what it means. You ask me the question, Am I willing to go all the way with him? And I told you, yeah. I didn't hesitate. See, ain't nobody going to take something from me and live. I'm telling you that right now. Ain't nobody going to take what I've worked hard for and spent my money on and live to enjoy it. They ain't going to do it. I'm telling you right now, I'll die and go to hell before I let that happen. Now, you
now let me ask you this. Now, are you talking about defending it as a lone wolf or defending it as a community?
I don't give a damn if it's me by myself, because I know ain't nobody going to go along with it. I'm going out there by my damn self. I bought it by my damn self, and I'm going to defend it by myself. I ain't going to ask nobody else to do it, because didn't nobody else put no money in it. Now, if I go out there with a group, that's different, because I know some of them going to run. Just like when Jesus was out here preaching, the disciples scattered, didn't they? And they left him out there by himself. So now, I see, when I read the Bible, I put it in practical terms. I mean, I don't put the flowery type sermons and all of that crap in it. I read it for the examples that it set. Yeah, if you run and I'm in a group, and I'm the last man standing, I'm just like the white boy. I'll fight until I die. Now, if you ain't willing to do that, what you're talking about, hey, you just talking, because you don't believe what you're saying.
Well, you got to defend it. And you, you need to plan on that in the early stages. You don't build it and then try to defend it. No, you need to you need to think all that stuff out. You're not going to think of everything. But you got to have the basics in place in case. I mean, actually, you really need to have ongoing meetings on, you know, what are the weaknesses in the community from day, you know, because times and things change.
And look, I'm going to tell you this. You're going to have to come up with both a defensive and an offensive strategy.
And you're right, and an offense. You just made me think of the chess game, because in chess, you got to have an offense and a defense.
And the trick is this. Hey, look, we're going to lose, but we're going to make sure that the we're going to make sure that the SOBs, they're going to pay a price. If they want it, they got to pay a price. We may lose. We may die, but they're going to pay a hell of a cost to get this. And we're not prepared to do it. You said you're not prepared to do it. You say you're going to play the victim. Yeah, I'm going to just move on and get something else. And the thing is, you've been talking about, huh?
I did say that.
Yeah, but you've been talking about everybody cry victim. Well, you a victim. You just proved to me that you're a damn victim, because you're saying, hey, look, I'm willing to give this up. I'm going to let you have it, and I'm going to go somewhere else. That's a victim. So you can't bring that victim stuff within earshot of me anymore.
Well, what you've woken me up to is basically I need to plan and have multiple offenses and defenses, build that into my, for lack of a better term, development plan from the get-go, and then assess that on a regular basis.
You're going to have to tweak it and update it on a regular basis. That's what they do, don't they?
True. That's what happens.
Everybody does it except black folk. See, we get comfortable, like you were talking about Jesse Jackson and Mega Evers and Farrakhan and Al Sharpton and all of them. See, all they do is they got one vision. I'm going to go in here and march because there's an injustice here. But the only has come up with a strategy to protect themselves and do it well as Farrakhan. Nobody screws with Farrakhan because he carries his bodyguards with him. And his bodyguards have orders. Hey, look, if anybody threatens me, you take their head off. You make sure you make an example out of them. And
well,
he's been able to.
I've seen him in action. I was at a Farrakhan speech in D.C. at the convention center, the first convention center in D.C. And something wasn't going right because, you know, they had the men sitting on one side and the women sitting on the other side. And something went some woman, she wasn't acting right according to their standards, and they the ladies escorted this woman out.
And you didn't mention one other part. Before you go in there, you got searched, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. Mm-hmm.
And look, here's the other thing. They make sure that that whole area is covered. If anybody outside of anything that they feel is a threat to that area, they take care of it. But I'm just showing you the difference. And look, my thing is this. See, you criticize the civil rights leaders, but I'm going to tell you this. I haven't heard Larry Elder, Alan West, Ward Conley, Jesse Lee Peterson, or any other of those so-called black conservatives do anything to further the cause of black people. Now, those guys that you criticize have put their lives on the line. Al Sharpton took a knife in his chest. They have gone, and Medgar Evers gave his life.
He gave his life. MLK gave his life.
That's
Malcolm X gave his life.
You can't name me one conservative that have sacrificed any damn thing for the black community. Not one. But they're always criticizing, always going out there and demeaning people that have tried to do something. Now, whether you agree with it or not, they did move the needle. Medgar Evers was out there going out there trying to register people to vote. Back then, you couldn't vote in those areas where he was out there giving his life courageously now to make sure that those people vote. Jesse Jackson, look, there's a whole lot of things I don't agree with Jesse Jackson. I got problems with it. But you can't say he didn't go out there and do something. Now, whether he profited
Them made contributions. But hold, let's go back to the defending. One of the things, and I'm sure you heard me say this on here, when I visited Taft, Oklahoma, Summit, Oklahoma, and Tallahassee, Oklahoma, one thing that I did notice about those three towns, now this is in our current times right now, I was wondering how in the hell, and this goes with defense, whoever founded these towns, how did they found those towns? Because even now, unless, like with Taft, Oklahoma and Summit, Oklahoma, unless you know specifically the landscape, you can pass through Taft, Oklahoma and never know you went through Taft, Oklahoma. Summit, Oklahoma, one of the things that they anticipated, and I would do this with my stuff, is find a place where it's not easy to get to. That I would figure that's got to be part of your defense.
That's not a defense.
You don't think
that's
so?
No, because somebody going to know where you are. That's not a defense. But now, look, I sent you something answering the same question you just asked me, but you probably didn't read it. If you did, you didn't understand it.
So if you just sent it, that's on my phone. I haven't looked at my phone.
I sent this to you months back, but here's the thing. Black men that went in there, there were pockets of territory that you could claim. You could put your stake down, and then you could go and file it the people that was in charge of allocating out land. And those black folks went there with their Winchesters. That's how they got that property, and that's how they were able to keep it. Now, they don't tell you that, but ask them. Next time you go in those areas, they went there with their Winchesters and say, look, we got just as much right to stake a claim here as anybody else. And you know what? They got their property. So now I'm going – now, that's a story that's never been told, but I sent you – that information, because they didn't want blacks to have any property in Oklahoma, contrary to what you've read and what you've been told by broad media. They didn't want us there. And look, this is what your buddy always talking about, there were Creek Indians and Blackfoot and all of that shit. That's bull. There were black folks that left from South Carolina and Arrowheads went there to claim land. So now that's how they were able to keep it and maintain it and get it. Because, see, Brother L.A., nobody gives a black person anything. You got to take it. Just like the white boy came over here and took America. See, the Indians already owned it. But they came over here and said, look, I want what you got, and they took it. Sometimes you got to take something when you want it. And that's another thing. Are you willing to take something that you want as far as property is concerned? That's another thing. So if you, because see, most of the land that's arable, that's good land, is already taken anyway. But are you willing to go in and take it? Since you want everybody to go out there and claim a spot and build a camp.
I'm saying there's enough out there for everybody. That's my belief.
Not in America.
But
not,
the majority of people are not going to go out there and get anything because they want the comforts and conveniences of Egypt.
They don't want
to move to upstate New York. They don't want once again, and you know, a lot of people who live in Brooklyn or Manhattan, you're not going to get them to move out of the city. They're not going to go to upstate New York where you can grow food and all this other stuff or catch food. They like everything is right in their neighborhood. That's the way they live.
Brother L.A., the minute black folks start moving in an area, you're going to get resistance. I'm going to just be straight up. See, because you're looking at this thing through rose-colored glass. Anywhere that a congregation of black folks go and they want to set up shop, they're going to meet resistance. That's just the way of America. That's the laws of the jungle. Now, you can say whatever you want to say. You can have all the money you want to and pay your money and offer to pay your money, but when they see a large group of black folks going somewhere, you're going to meet resistance. Now, you may not think so, but look, I've been out here a long time, and I've read a lot of stuff, and I've seen a lot of stuff, and I'm just telling you now, are you willing to go out there and take it? Now, I'm just putting those things. Don't hesitate.
No.
Okay.
Just like with the title of this podcast, which is, I mean, not just specifically, but the overall title, it's my house. That's what the squatter tried to take my house.
Thank you. Did you
and
protect
I had
it?
To defend that.
That's right. That's right. So now
I
you
had
look.
To defend that.
That's right. But now you were able to do it legally. But would you have been willing to and drag that squad out and say, get the hell out of here?
Right. And now, I've said this on here before. It got to the point where I got so dark in my thinking, killing her. But I said, well, number one, I don't know how to do that. I don't know how to do it and get away with it. Number three, karma, I said, if I do something like that, she'll lose for eternity. I mean, I'll lose for eternity. She'll win. And then I snapped out of that and just my thinking changed and just kept on with my legal proceedings. I beat her legally. That's how I won. It took me almost 3 years to do it, but it took me, you know, but I did get to a dark spot of thinking negatively. But if I did that, I'm looking at she would win for eternity and I would lose for eternity, so it wasn't worth it.
Yeah, plus, you know what?
I didn't know how to get away with it.
You always brag about capitalism, you and my buddy. But capitalism is nothing but self-preservation and survival of the fittest. In capitalism, you have to have winners and losers. Am I correct?
True.
And look, that goes with any ism that you talk about. Communism, socialism, regardless of what it is, it's all survival of the fittest and self-preservation. My thing is this year. See, I had a person, and I just confronted this person this morning in one of my rentals, and I spent $1,800 getting it squared away for inspection. And I heard that this joker was going down there trying to pry the door open. Now, I gave him a key. And this joker went down there, trying, and he lost the key that I gave him, so he's going to pry a door all open with a crowbar that I just purchased. I paid $269 and some change for that door. Gave him a key to a new lock and a new knob. And he was down there with a crowbar trying to pry it open because he didn't know where he put the key.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I ain't no victim. I went down there and I told him, I said, look, I'm here to whoop your ass. Because, look, you know what? I paid good money to make sure that you had proper protection for your gear. All you
right.
had to do was come to my house and ask for a key if you didn't have it. Well, the thing is, I didn't know where you were. I said, that's no damn excuse. If you didn't have your key, then you were supposed to wait until you found me. And I had my gun, and I told you in a prior podcast, I never have the safety on them, on my arm. I never have it off on my gun.
Uh-huh.
And if he had a swung at crowbar, I was going to shoot the shit out of him. That's how far I go to protect what I got. Now, that squatter you got, see, if they wouldn't leave, and I asked them to leave and I had done them a favor, see, we would have been moving some furniture in that house. And I would have went to him once.
Now,
and said, look,
Beasley,
you got
this particular squatter was a woman.
I don't give
black
a shit.
Black man, black woman.
I don't care. I don't care. Look. When I do you a favor and you're taking advantage of it and I ask you and it's my stuff and I want you to leave, you got a problem with me. Plain and simple. I am not going to be a victim. That's just me. Now, you
right.
say, well, are you being unreasonable? But, you know, I just started off with this conversation. I listened to you the whole time and I said, you know what, I'm going to ask him a question. To see how far will he go. And you told me how far you go.
I admit, I'm not ready to lay down my life for it. I'm not there yet.
And take a life.
And I'm not ready to take one.
Okay. Well, then what you're talking about is not feasible. What you're talking about. And look, getting other people to believe the way you believe. It's not feasible.
See, if you got a group of people and you got a community that you're building, like I say, you can plan, put that all in your plan. All right, folks, how are we, even if it's 5 people, we need to have a plan on how we're going to defend it if, you know, from whatever, people trying to take over, robberies or whatever. So you need to anticipate that. But if you need to anticipate it to the best of your ability. How far are you willing? I'm just looking at, you know what, there's abundance of land out here. That's where I'm at with it right now.
Well, look.
Because, listen, now, hold it. Beasley, look, let's take the case with Ahmaud Arbery in Georgia, wherever that was. Now, Travis McMichael, the son of the father and son team, he got the most time out of this. You know, life with God knows how many years. He just got another sentence on this past Monday. Now, I heard his testimony on YouTube a few times, and he honestly thought he was defending himself when Ahmaud Arbery grabbed his gun. But that defense didn't work.
Brother L.A., I'm taking up a lot of your time, and I know you got to go. I'm gonna give you.
Well,
this.
Yeah, it's after 1 o'clock. We'll
yeah,
probably
yeah. Because
well, I'm gonna have some. Hopefully, I'm gonna have somebody on here tomorrow from Harvey, not Harvey, Mount Bayou. But
yeah.
You brought up a very important part. How far is a person willing to go to defend their whatever they have built, and what plans? Because, see, when you ask me that question, I have no plan, and that's my weak point. There's 2 weak points. You got to have an identity, and you need to be associated with people with the same identity, and then you have to have offenses and defenses to try to protect what you have built.
Well,
even if it's a little homestead.
Well, I mean, even if you're an individual. Now, the gentleman that founded Mound Bayou, he bought that on his own, and he attracted people
in. He didn't build up the community on his own, though.
That's right. That's right. So, and O.W. Gurley did the same thing. But like you said before, and look, one thing you can say about Tulsa, Oklahoma, those people were willing to defend it to a certain extent, but they didn't have an offensive strategy. But now, let me give you this. I'm going to let you go because you got to go, but let me give you this. What was this guy named Dillinger, ever what it was, named, went to one of those towns there in Oklahoma, and he was going to rob the bank. And
and they chased him out of town?
They chased him out of town. They had
they
a defense.
They chased him out of town. They couldn't rob the bank.
They had a defense. He had to get out of there with his damn life, didn't he?
Right.
So now
that happened in Boley, Oklahoma. You're right. They had a defense. They had anticipated that from the get-go.
And that's why those towns are right there today, because they know that those black folks were willing to defend what they had. So that's a good example for you. But the thing is, I'm just telling you, now, even if you are an individual, you have to have those strategies in place. Now, you ain't going to find a lot of people that wants to do that. But even if you just do it by yourself, I'm by myself. But I told you what I'm willing to do.
Right.
So now, if you can play the victim in all you want to, you're a victim. So now, anytime you come up there and talk about victimhood, look in the mirror. Because you're saying that I'm willing to be a victim. And I'm going to remind you of it every time you bring that up.
Yeah, well, you gave me some food for thought. You gave me some food for thought.
Okay. And look. You bring your boy in here and see what he tell you. And I'm going to say the same darn thing. And look, by the way, if you will pass on my my sentiments to the Honorable. And if I could find his address, I'd send him a card or either send him some flowers or something.
Well, I'm going to see if I can get him on here tomorrow because his wife is from Mount Bayou. And then he's got another guy that's helping him that he's from Mount Bayou. So my goal is I want to pick up this conversation tomorrow because you bring up a very good point. You got to have an offense and you got to have a defense. And those are two things I haven't thought about.
Yeah, well, I mean, I just
but
put that out
but
there.
But it's prudent to think about it.
Because you're
because
in
I know what, like in Taft, Oklahoma, they don't have a policeman. When they did have one, he was just a night watchman. But they do have guns in Taft. I know that
Thank
much.
You. And they will use them. But
and they, oh,
you're
I
not,
saw some shotgun shells out there.
Thank
just
you.
Just walking
but,
around.
But ask them about this. Mentality of those people that form those towns and see what they tell you. But look, Brother L.A., I've took up a lot of your time, and I'm sorry.
Yeah, well, it's 1:14 here. We're going to continue this tomorrow. Everyone have a good rest of the day.